For the life of your car, go, go! The Gulf Oil Companies and your neighborhood Good Gulf dealer present We the People. This is Milo Bolton welcoming you to another We the People program with the music of Oscar Bradley. Tonight, among our guests are Ella Logan,
Mary Livingston,
Hank Greenberg,
Jack Benny.
These and many other real people with real and exciting stories. Stories you hear only when the Gulf Oil Companies and your neighborhood Good Gulf dealer present We the People. The life of your car, go, go. News is made by people, and Gulf Oil's first two guests are people who recently made the headlines. The first one was nominated by Time magazine in its first issue of 1947 as the Woman of the Year, but the actual identity of this outstanding female was unknown. An intensive search was carried out with only a photograph as a clue, and just last week she was located by a reporter. So now, Gulf presents at our We the People microphone, Mrs. Cora O'Connor of Worcester, Massachusetts, the Woman of the Year.
Oh, Mr. Bolton, I'm so ashamed the way I got all that publicity. I'm just an ordinary person, a wife and mother of three children, and I work at the YWCA. You'll admit all that's nothing special.
Well, that seems to make you a pretty typical American woman, Mrs. O'Connor, but how about telling us your story?
Of course. Every day, I take the Tatton Square bus home from work. So one night, I waited for the 5 o'clock bus as usual. It came along, and I stepped to the curb, but the bus rolled right on past me. It was too crowded. Well, about 10 minutes later, another one came along. This time, I put one foot off the curb and waved my hand. And can you imagine, Mr. Bolden, that second bus sped right on past me, too.
Oh, I know, Mrs. O'Connor. It's happened to all of us, and it certainly is mighty annoying.
Annoying? Goodness, Mr. Bolton, my family was waiting at home, and I had dinner to cook. Anyway, for the third bus, I waved both hands and shouted. It stopped, but only because of a red light.
Well, was it crowded too, Mrs. O'Connor?
It certainly was, but I was getting pretty desperate. A man standing next to me managed to squeeze on. Then the door shut almost in my face. I pounded on the door, then went right around in front of the bus to get the driver's attention. He just pointed to the people inside. Just then, the red light changed, and he began to race his engine as if to drive on. All of a sudden, I was mad. I just stood there in the road in front of the bus. Then the driver yelled out the window, "Okay, lady, I can stay here as long as you can." That's when something happened inside me. I thought, all right, then you will stay there. I didn't move, and the bus didn't move either. I learned later I'd stalled traffic for a mile and a half. But I was perfectly calm and cool. 20 minutes passed. I was beginning to feel foolish, but I was still mad. Then a news photographer took that picture.
And that picture of a woman standing firmly in front of a crowded bus made front pages from coast to coast.
Mr. Bolton, I don't know exactly why I held up that bus. Actually, I know very well it wasn't the bus company's fault. And I certainly hope I didn't set a bad example for others. As I said before, I really felt so ashamed, especially when I finally did get home.
Well, why? Why was that, Mrs. O'Connor?
Mr. Bolton, you won't believe it, but my husband was on that bus.
Gulf Oil's next guest made big sports news this week. You all know him. He's the famous baseball player who returned after 4 years in the Army to become the heaviest hitter in the major league, Hank Greenberg.
Okay, Hank. Well, Marlo, as you know, I've spent nearly all the baseball years of my life with one team, the Detroit Tigers in the American League. I guess you know how a ball player feels about his team. It's more than just a job. You play for a ball club for 15 years, and it becomes your life.
Sure.
The local fans, every one of them, are your friends and advisors. And you do your darndest to give them the best baseball you're capable of. That's the way a ball player feels about his club, Marlowe. Well, last week, I was listening to radio at home. Suddenly, the announcer read a sports bulletin. Hank Greenberg sold by the Tigers of Pittsburgh. Well, I couldn't believe it, but it turned out to be all too true. I was sold not only to a new team, but to a different league, the National League.
Well, Hank, there's been a great deal of speculation in the newspapers on just how you feel about leaving the Detroit Tigers.
Well, that's exactly why I came here tonight, Marlowe. I want to put an end to all the rumors that are flying around and set the record straight once and for all. Baseball fans have no doubt heard the story that I did not want to stay with the Tigers. Well, tonight, on We the People, I want to disclose for the first time a letter I wrote to the owner of the Detroit club last December 16th. At that time, the job of general manager of the Tigers was open. So I wrote to my friend and boss, Walter O. Briggs, and I quote, "As you know, I have spent my entire playing career with Detroit Baseball Club, and I proudly feel I have helped to contribute to its success. Since I plan to retire from the active playing ranks in the near future, it is natural that I should like to continue my career in an executive capacity with the Detroit organization." Well, Marlowe, that's my answer to the rumor that I wish to leave the Detroit Tigers.
Well, how about the reply to your letter, Hank?
Well, funny thing, I never got one.
Well, Hank, you're in swell shape. You led both leagues last year by knocking out 44 home runs. And it looks to me as if you can do a great job of ball playing for Pittsburgh. Now, how about that?
Well, my record in the past shows that I've done my best wherever I've played. And you can be sure that I'll always continue to do so. I've got some good years of ball playing ahead of me, and I hope to be getting my share of base hits for a long time. And when I can't, little Hank, my son who just arrived 3 days ago, will be in there slugging to make the old man proud.
Well, Hank, congratulations on that new addition to the family. Good luck, and thanks a million. Today, most of you look closely at the price tags on the things you buy, and you hope that whatever the price, you'll get value for your money. Well, if you buy every day, one of the most common of commodities does give you real value for your money and takes very few of your pennies. I mean the gasoline that powers your car. Why, just imagine it. For a dollar's worth of gasoline, most of us can see more of the country roundabout than our ancestors could see in a lifetime. Yes, when you pay for gasoline, you buy greater freedom of movement. And wherever you go, in bustling cities or out on lonely highways, you'll find gasoline service stations to help you on your way. That, too, is a part of what you get for your money. Availability of supply. And finally, you get a quality product. Because the gasoline that goes into the tank of your automobile has been highly refined, expertly blended, so your car will have smooth performance. In these days of high prices, the fact that gasoline still costs only a few pennies per gallon should be a matter of satisfaction to you motorists. It's a source of pride to the American petroleum industry, of which Gulf Oil is a part. Almost 15 years ago, a young girl left her home in Scotland, and she took the high road which led her to America. 1947 finds her on Broadway as the star of the newest big musical hit in New York, Finian's Rainbow. Tonight, she's here at our Gulf Oil microphone, and she's brought with her to We the People a story as warm and friendly as the songs she sings. Ladies and gentlemen, meet Ella Logan.
Good evening, Mr. Bolton, and I thank you from the bottom of my heart for all the kind things that you said about me. You know, it took a lot of nerve to come to America.
Well, what made you take the big step, Ella?
It was something a wonderful friend once said to me. In England, I played on the same bill with a comedy team called Carney and Sharp. And one day after a performance, Mr. Sharp came up to me, And he patted me on the shoulder. He looked at me for a minute, and then he said,
"You know, lass, there's a twinkle in your eye that takes the sadness out of me heart."
That's just what he said to me. And then he asked me if I would ever go to the United States and perform to the American audiences. I told him I was frightened. And then he said, "Well, if I get there first, Weella, I'll send for you, and we'll do a play together." Those words meant a great deal to me. After all, he was a very important man on the stage. And he gave me the confidence I needed.
And so you set out on the high road?
Aye, and it was straight to America. And you were all very kind to me.
And Ella, I'd like to tell we the people the way you showed your thanks. It would be hard to find another entertainer who traveled as many miles as you did during the war to bring entertainment to our fighting men. Now, your new play, Finian's Rainbow, is the first time that you played for a civilian audience in, almost 4 years, isn't it?
That it is, Mr. Bolton. I played the part of an Irish girl who comes to America with her father. I'll never forget the day I went over to meet the cast. They were all standing on the stage, and I recognized most of them. All but the man who was to play Finian, my father. Well, when we were introduced, he looked at me for a minute, and then said,
"You know, lass, there's a twinkle in your eyes that takes the sadness out of me heart."
Yes, it's the same man who said that to me a long, long time ago in England. He's Mr. Albert Sharp.
And this is your first visit to America, Mr. Sharp.
Yes, Mr. Bolton. I'm afraid I'll have to confess we ever turned the tables on me and got here first. She took the high road and I took the low road, and she got here a few years before me.
Well, your words that you two would do a play together in America came true, but it certainly took a mighty long time, didn't it?
Well, Mr. Bolton, like Ella here, it was always been me life's dream to come over, but instead I stuck to the stages in Ireland and England and a few movies. I had just about put me dream away in mothballs when I got a telegram. Someone had seen me in a picture. They wanted me to come to America and play the role of Finian, and here I am at last.
Well, how do you like it here compared to Ireland?
Oh, fine. There's more Irishmen here.
So now you know why I wanted to be here tonight with Albert Sharp. He was the first to put the notion in my head about coming to America. I have been very happy here. It's my home now. And I want to introduce Albert to you, and I hope you'll open your heart to him, as you did to me, and as you do to all of us who come over here from the other side. And now, for old time's sake, Albert and I are going to sing a song that we used to sing together a long, long time ago, just for fun. It's called The Mountains of Mourn.
Well, this New York's a wonderful sight, with the people here working by day and by night.
Now they don't sell potatoes, nor barley, nor wheat.
But there's gangs of them digging for gold in the street. At least when I asked them, that's what I was told. So I just took a hand at this digging for gold.
But for all that you found there, you might as well be
where the mountains of mourn sweep down to the sea.
And there's beautiful girls here.
Ah, well, never mind.
With beautiful shapes nature never designed.
So I'll wait for the wild rose that's waiting for me.
Where the mountains of mourn sweep down to the sea. But
behind it lies a tale few people know. It's the story of Gulf Oil's next guest, Miss Daisy Smith of Montgomery, Alabama.
I have been completely blind for many years. I shall never forget that dreadful day of the accident which took away my sight. For a long time after that, I felt so helpless and afraid of people. Then my little nephew Charles came to visit. More than anything else in the world, I wanted that child to love me. But what could a blind woman do to make a little boy happy? Finally, I decided to tell Charles a story. His playmate was with him on the porch when I began the story of the fish of the sea. When it was a hoop turned into a magic prince. When it ended, I asked, "How do you like it, boys?" There was no answer. I was alone. The boys were gone, both of them.
Oh, well, didn't they like the story?
At first, I thought I was deserted, but I soon heard them coming back. They were bringing two other boys with them to hear the story, and they were begging for more stories. After that, from day to day, more and more children came and sat on the porch to listen. I felt that my life was beginning all over again. I could not see the faces, but I could hear their voices and the happy laughter, and it made me glad. I didn't care how noisy they were, but the neighbors complained. Then a policeman brought in a summons from the mayor.
Summons? Well, tell us why the mayor sent for you, Miss Daisy.
He wanted to tell me that the neighbors were complaining of the noise, that I should have to send the children away. For me, that was the end. All my loneliness was beginning again. The mayor was very kind. He took me by the hand. I was feeling very weak and empty inside. I could hardly believe my ears when he asked me if I would become the official storyteller of all the playgrounds at Oak Park. I told him I doubted if the children really wanted me.
Well, what did the mayor say?
He handed me a large piece of paper. He said that on that paper was 750 children's names. The dear children had made up the petition and brought it to the mayor. They were all asking for me. Mr. Bolden, that was the most wonderful day of my life.
And ever since then, Miss Daisy, you've been telling stories to the children in Oak Park.
Yes, that was 7 years ago. And do you know, when I feel the little ones pressing about me, I do not have to see the look in their eyes. I know it's there. All my stories have made the children laugh and wonder some, but it's such a little thing. Why, it is nothing compared to what they've done for me. They've taken away all the loneliness that only a blind person can know. More than all, I have learned that the little things you do for others will make your own life richer than any you have ever dreamed of.
Favorite Love and Bloom, you know you're in for fun and laughter. For that's the song that means Jack Benny's on the air. But tonight, Love and Bloom has an even more special meaning. For it's the 20th wedding anniversary of Jack Benny and his famous partner, Mary Livingston, one of Hollywood's most happily married couples. What's the secret behind this happy marriage? Well, tonight you're going to hear the answer from Jack and Mary themselves. So come in, Hollywood.
Congratulations, Jack Benny and Mary Livingston, on your 20th wedding anniversary, and welcome to We the People.
Thank you, Tom Hanlon.
Well, how about thanking me? I did the time.
Now, Mary, wait, it hasn't been that bad.
Maybe not. Anyhow, I won a bet.
A bet? On our 20th anniversary?
Yeah. 20 years ago, a woman bet me I couldn't stand you this long.
That sounds just like your mother.
Was your mother.
Well, she just didn't want to lose me, that's all.
And why was she trying to sell all the girls' raffle tickets?
Because your mother put her up to it.
Oh, Jack, you can't make me sorry. You can say anything you want about my mother.
Not on the air, I can't.
Oh, Jack, only joking, Tom. We're both very happy.
You and Jack?
No, me and my mother.
Now, Mary, don't be smart. You know we're happy. It says we have to be in our contract with Lucky Strike.
Well, say, how did you two meet each other?
Well, it was in a bookstore. We both were buying a copy of the same book, a novel called I Stand Condemned.
I Stand Condemned?
Yes, it's a story of a man who goes to the electric chair and leaves three lovely children, we, thee, and people. Say, Mary. Oh, pardon me, it's your line.
Yes, that is it. Mary, tell us about your honeymoon. Where did you go?
To Niagara Falls. It was wonderful. I could hardly wait to leave there for New York to tell Jack about the place.
Now, wait a minute, Mary. You mean you went on your honeymoon without Jack?
Yes, I had already seen the fall. I think everyone should see Niagara Falls, you know, even single people.
Well, supposing you tell me when the proposal took place.
It was a few months after we met. One night, Jack suddenly got down on one knee and proposed to me.
I did not.
You did, too.
Well, why don't you tell the truth, Mary? Listen, Tom, here's what happened. We were sitting on the sofa in Mary's room. She dropped her handkerchief on the floor. I bent down to pick it up. The minute I got down on my knee, she said, "Oh, Jack, this is so Southern." And between this and Southern, her mother called the preacher.
But, Jack, you really did propose to Mary, didn't you?
Yes, it was pretty tough, you know, with all those interruptions.
Interruptions?
Yeah, the next time I started to propose, her father came in, saw me on my knees, and yelled, "I'll fade you for any part of a dollar."
Oh, really, Ann? What did you do this time, Mary?
I won $2 and bought the marriage license.
That's right, and I held up the bus for 2 hours. I also held Greenberg on third. Hiya, Hank.
Say, Mary, before you go, would you tell the folks what Jack gave you for an anniversary present?
Oh, the usual gift.
What's that?
A pair of shoelaces with plastic tips.
Now, Mary, why don't you tell him the truth? What about the car I gave you for your anniversary?
Did Jack really give you a car?
Uh-huh. A convertible coupe.
And what did you give Jack?
A convertible toupee.
Mary.
On a nice day, we both put our tops down.
Mary, you know, you didn't even kiss me for giving you that new car.
Well, if you really want a kiss, here it comes. Well, go on, Jack. The next night in the script is yours. Read the next line. Jack, read the next line.
Wait till I wipe the steam off my glasses. Good night, folks.
Good night.
At one time or another, all of us feel pretty down on our luck. Feel that the whole world is against us. Well, We the People's next guest has a story of courage and faith in a bright future that should help all of us the next time things go wrong. That guest is waiting now at our Gulf Oil microphone in Minneapolis. Come in, Minneapolis.
Hello, everybody. My name is Marion Oliver. You'll have to be patient. I can speak only a few words at a time, because I'm talking from an iron lung.
Oh, I'm Captain Hero, Mary Pearson, the polio ward at General Hospital. That whishing sound you hear is the iron lung that keeps Marion alive. She can talk only when the iron lung is breathing out. Marion is 26 years old and a dancer. She wanted to be a musical comedy star and had a good start, too, before the war came along. For nearly 5 years, she was a USO entertainer. Went everywhere, from Alaska to Africa, from Italy to the South Pacific. I love that USO work. Even stayed with it after the war. But one day the doctors sent me home for a rest. Then, while I was still weak, polio struck me down. I'm afraid I don't remember.
much about those first few days.
Well, I do, Marion. Folks, when Marion came in last August, she was unconscious, completely paralyzed. And it was touch and go for a long time as to whether she'd live. But Marion had one thing we couldn't see at first, a fighting heart. As we brought her slowly back to consciousness, we found she still had the power of speech, but her lungs were paralyzed. She's strengthening her voice by the day, though, through exercises and talking.
I can wiggle my fingers now, and I'll soon move my legs. Just 2 weeks ago, my girlfriend moved her leg for the first time. Yesterday, she kicked a book right off the foot of her bed. You just wait and see. I'll beat this polio yet.
Well, Marion, the way you're fighting, I wouldn't be a bit surprised one fine day to see you putting on your dancing shoes again.
You can bet on it, nurse. I'll go right on getting better until I'm well and can dance again. Thanks to you and the folks out there and all you've done for me through the March of Dimes. And now, if you don't mind, I'm just a bit hooked. So I'll say good night. But won't you wish upon a star to help my dreams come true? And remember, everybody, life may get you down, but only you can count yourself.
We the people speak. This is Milo Bolton again reminding you to listen in next week. You'll meet ace comedian Milton Berle, and along with the music of Oscar Bradley, you'll also meet many other real people with real stories you hear only when the Gulf Oil Companies and your neighborhood Good Gulf dealer present We the People. For the life of your car, go Gulf. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.